Chapter 30 could occasionally be heard, and her young sister could see that her eyes were bright, and her face beaming, as if divers social wants and looming penuriousness had never been within her experience. Mr. Doncastle was quite absorbed in what she was saying. So was the queer old man whom Menlove had called Lord Mountclere. The dashing widow looks very well, does she not? ... said a person at Piketty's elbow. It was her conductor Menlove, now returned again, whom Piketty had quite forgotten. She will do some damage here tonight, you will find, continued Menlove. How long have you been with her? A long time, I mean rather a short time, stammered Piketty. I know her well enough. I was her maid once, or rather her mother-in-law's, but that was long before you knew her. I did not by any means find her so lovable as you seem to think her, when I had to do with her at close quarters. An awful flirt, awful. Don't you find her so? I don't know. If you don't yet you will know. But come down from your perch, the dining room door will not be open again for some time, and I will show you about the rooms upstairs. This is a larger house than Mrs. Peterwin's, as you see. Just come and look at the drawing rooms. Wishing much to get rid of Menlove, yet fearing to offend her, Piketty followed upstairs. Dinner was almost over by this time, and when they entered the front drawing room, a young man servant and maid were there rekindling the lights. Now let's have a game of cat and mice, said the maid servant cheerily. There's plenty of time before they come up. Agreed, said Menlove promptly. You will play, will you not, Miss Chickerell? No, indeed, said Piketty, aghast. Never mind, then, you look on. Away then ran the housemaid and Menlove, and the young footman started at their heels. Round the room, over the furniture, under the furniture, through the furniture, out of one window, along the balcony, in at another window, again round the room, so they glided with the swiftness of swallows and the noiselessness of ghosts. Then the housemaid drew a jew's harp from her pocket, and struck up a lively waltz sotto voce. The footman seized Menlove, who appeared nothing loth, and began spinning gently round the room with her, to the time of the fascinating measure which fashion hails, from countesses to queens, and maids and valets dance behind the scenes. Piketty, who had been accustomed to unsailed country cottages all her life, wherein the scamper of a mouse is heard distinctly from floor to floor, exclaimed in a terrified whisper, at viewing all this, they'll hear you underneath. They'll hear you, and we shall all be ruined. Not at all, came from the cautious dancers. These are some of the best built houses in London, double floors, filled in with material that will deaden any row you like to make, and we make none. But come and have a turn yourself, Miss Chickerell. The young man relinquished Menlove, and on the spur of the moment seized Piketty. Piketty flounced away from him in indignation, backing into a corner with ruffled feathers, like a pullet trying to appear a hen. How dare you touch me? She said, with rounded eyes. I'll tell somebody downstairs of you, who'll soon see about it. What a baby, she'll tell her father. No, I shan't. Somebody you are all afraid of, that's who I'll tell. Nonsense, said Menlove, he meant no harm. Playtime was now getting short, and further antics being dangerous on that account, the performers retired again downstairs, Piketty of necessity following. Her nerves were screwed up to the highest pitch of uneasiness by the grotesque habits of these men and maids, who were quite unlike the country servants as he had known, and resembled nothing so much as pixies, elves, or gnomes, peeping up upon human beings from their shady haunts underground, sometimes for good, Sometimes for ill, sometimes doing heavy work, sometimes none. Teasing and worrying with impish laughter half suppressed, and vanishing directly mortal eyes were bent on them. Separate and distinct from overt existence under the sun, this life could hardly be without its distinctive pleasures, all of them being more or less pervaded by thrills and titillations from games of hazard, and the perpetual risk of sensational surprises. Long before this time, Piketty had begun to be anxious to get home again, but Menlove seemed particularly to desire her company, and pressed her to sit a while, telling her young friend, by way of entertainment, of various extraordinary love adventures in which she had figured as heroine when traveling on the continent. These stories had one and all a remarkable likeness. In a certain point, Menlove was always unwilling to love the adorer, and the adorer was always unwilling to live afterwards on account of it. Ha ha ha! ... in men's voices was heard from the distant dining room as the two women went on talking. And then, continued Menlove, there was that duel I was the cause of between the courier and the French valet. Dear me, what a trouble that was! Yet I could do nothing to prevent it. This courier was a very handsome man. They are handsome sometimes. ... yes, they are. My aunt married one. ... did she? Where do they live? ... they keep an hotel at Rouen. ... murmured Piketty, in doubt whether this should have been told or not. Well, he used to follow me to the English church every Sunday regularly, and I was so determined not to give my hand where my heart could never be, that I slipped out at the other door, while he stood expecting me by the one I entered. Here I met M. Pierre, when, as ill luck would have it, the other came round the corner, and seeing me talking to the valet, he challenged him at once. ... ha ha ha. ... was heard again afar. Did they fight? ... said Piketty. Yes, I believe they did. We left nice the next day, but I heard some time after of a duel not many miles off, and although I could not get hold of the names, I make no doubt it was between those two gentlemen. I never knew which of them fell, poor fellow, whichever it was. ... came from the dining room. Whatever are those boozy men laughing at, I wonder? ... said Menlove. They are always so noisy when the ladies have gone upstairs. Upon my soul, I'll run up and find out. ... no, don't, entreated Piketty, putting her hand on her entertainer's arm. It seems wrong. It is no concern of ours. ... wrong be hanged, anything on an impulse, said Mrs. Menlove, skipping across the room, and out of the door, which stood open, as did others in the house, the evening being sultry and oppressive. Piketty waited in her seat until it occurred to her that she could escape the lady's maid by going off into her father's pantry in her absence. But before this had been put into effect, Menlove appeared again. Such fun as they are having up there, she said. Somebody asked Mr. Ney to tell a story which he had told at some previous time, but he was very reluctant to do so, and pretended he could not recollect it. Well then, the other man, I could not distinguish him by his voice, began telling it, to prompt Mr. Ney's memory. And, as far as I could understand, it was about some lady who thought Mr. Ney was in love with her, and, to find whether he was worth accepting or not, she went with her maid at night to see his estate, and wandered about and got lost, and was frightened, and I don't know what besides. Then Mr. Ney laughed too, and said he liked such common sense in a woman. No names were mentioned, but I fancy, from the awkwardness of Mr. Ney at being compelled to tell it, that the lady is one of those in the drawing room. I should like to know which it was. ... I know, have heard something about it, said Piketty, blushing with anger. It was nothing at all like that. I wonder Mr. Ney had the audacity ever to talk of the matter, and to misrepresent it so greatly. apostrophe, tell all about it, do, apostrophe said Manlove. Oh no, apostrophe said Piketty. I promised not to say a word. Apostrophe, it is your mistress, I expect. Apostrophe, you may think what you like, but the lady is anything but a mistress of mine. Apostrophe, the flighty Manlove pressed her to tell the whole story, but finding this useless the subject was changed. Presently her father came in, and, taking no notice of Manlove, told his daughter that as he had been called for. Piketty very readily put on her things, and on going outside found Joey awaiting her. Mr. Chickerel followed closely, with sharp glances from the corner of his eye, and it was plain from Joey's nervous manner of lingering in the shadows of the area doorway instead of entering the house, that the butler had in some way set himself to prevent all communion between the fair lady's maid and his son for, that evening at least. He watched Piketty and her brother off the premises, and the pair went on their way towards Exonbury Crescent, very few words passing between them. Piketty's thoughts had turned to the proposed visit to Nulcia, and Joey was sulky under disappointment, and the blank of thwarted purposes. 30. On the housetop, Piketty, are you asleep? Ethelberta whispered softly at dawn the next morning, by the half-open door of her sister's bedroom. No, I keep waking, it is so warm. So do one. Suppose we get up, and see the sun rise. The east is filling with flame. Yes, I should like it, said Piketty. The restlessness which had brought Ethelberta hither in slippers and dressing gown at such an early hour owed its origin to another cause than the warmth of the weather, but of that she did not speak as yet. Piketty's room was an attic, with windows in the roof a chamber dismal enough at all times, and very shadowy now. While Piketty was wrapping up, Ethelberta placed a chair under the window, and mounting upon this they stepped outside, and seated themselves within the parapet. The air was as clear and fresh as on a mountainside. Sparrows chattered, and birds of a species unsuspected at later hours could be heard singing in the park hard by, while here and there on ridges and flats a cat might be seen going calmly home from the devilries of the night, to resume the amiabilities of the day. I am so sorry I was asleep when you reached home, said Piketty. I was so anxious to tell you something I heard of, and to know what you did, but my eyes would shut, try as I might, and then I tried no longer. Did you see me at all, Berta? Never once. I had an impression that you were there. I fancied you were from Father's carefully vacuous look, whenever I glanced at his face. But were you careful about what you said, and did you see Manlove? I felt all the time that I had done wrong in letting you come. The gratification to you was not worth the risk to me. I saw her and talked to her. But I am certain she suspected nothing. I enjoyed myself very much, and there was no risk at all. I am glad it is no worse news. However, you must not go there again. Upon that point I am determined. It was a good thing I did go, all the same. I'll tell you why when you have told me what happened to you. Nothing of importance happened to me. I expect you got to know the Lord you were to meet? Oh yes, Lord Mountclear. And it's dreadful how fond he is of you, quite ridiculously taken up with you. I saw that well enough. Such an old man too. I wouldn't have him for the world. Don't jump at conclusions so absurdly, Piketty. Why wouldn't you have him for the world? Because he is old enough to be my grandfather, and yours too. Indeed he is not. He is only middle-aged. Oh, Berta. 65 at least. He may or may not be that. And if he is, it is not old. He is so entertaining that one forgets all about age in connection with him. apostrophe apostrophe, he laughs like this, hee. Apostrophe apostrophe Piketty introduced as much antiquity into her face as she could, by screwing it up and suiting the action to the word. This very odd thing occurred, apostrophe said Ethelberta, to get Piketty off the track of Lord Mountclair's peculiarities, as it seemed. I was saying to Mr. Ney that we were going to Nulcia for a time, feeling that he would not be likely to know anything about such an out-of-the-way place, when Lord Mountclair, who was near, said, I shall be at Enkworth Court in a few days, probably at the time you are at Nulcia. The Imperial Archaeological Association holds its meetings in that part of Wessex this season, and Corvesgate Castle, near Nulcia, is one of the places on our list. Then he hoped I should be able to attend. Did you ever hear anything so strange? Now, I should like to attend very much, not on Lord Mountclair's account, but because such gatherings are interesting, and I have never been to one. Yet there is this to be considered. Would it be right for me to go without a friend to such a place? Another point is, that we shall live in menagerie style at Nulcia for the sake of the children, and we must do it economically in case we accept Aunt Charlotte's invitation to Rouen. Hence, if he or his friends find us out there, it will be awkward for me. So the alternative is Nulcia or some other place for us. Apostrophe apostrophe, let it be Nulcia, now we have once settled it, apostrophe said Piketty anxiously. I have mentioned to Faith Julian, that we shall be. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.